Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do.
That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill building courses for you to choose from because the steps that you choose to take today will help you to love what you do in the future. And that's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking young and profiting with Hala Taha.
Right, we're joined today by Hala Taha, and our conversation is going to be all about making money and getting paid. Hala is the host of the Young and Profiting, also known as YAP podcast, which is a top business and entrepreneurship podcast across all the different apps. And she is also the founder and CEO of YAP Media. It's a business podcast network. They've got a full service social media podcast marketing agency for all the top podcasters out there, including celebrities and CEOs, and that might be a part of the reason why she's landed guests like Matthew McConaughey, Damon John, Seth Godin, just to name a few. But Hala is an expert on networking, marketing, side hustles, and personal branding as well. She's a LinkedIn pro, and so we've got a bunch of questions in that arena as well. Hala, thank you so much for talking with us today.
I am so pumped for this conversation. You guys are so fun. And I can't wait.
We're pumped too. A lot to get to, a lot of ground to cover. But the first question we got to ask everybody who comes on the podcast is, what do they like to splurge on? Because Matt and I, we splurge on craft beer. We're drinking a good one right now. And sometimes craft beer costs, you know, a pretty penny. What's the thing that you spend more money than some people think is sane on while you're doing the right thing and you're saving and investing for your future?
It's definitely splurging on beauty expenses. I am dropping a lot of cash at Sephora every single month. I am getting facials. I'm getting my eyelashes done every week, my nails done. And honestly, part of my brand is to look young, and I feel my most confident when I feel my most beautiful, and I feel like it just helps me be a better, more productive person when I take care of myself. So that also includes a gym membership I pay for. And
oh yeah, I'm all
about
that.
Just taking care of myself.
I love it. Okay, so does that technically means that these are business expenses?
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
I do get to expense some of it's going on my business card for sure.
Yeah, it doesn't mean it's free, right? But it is at least helpful.
Expense,
so you're not like,
yeah,
you save some taxation on that stuff.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Okay, Hala, so you said that you've had an entrepreneurial spirit ever since you were a little kid, I think since you were 4 years old. Mm-hmm. Where did that come from? And I mean, I guess specifically, I want to know if it was nurture, if it was a part of your family culture, or if it was more just sort of nature, if it's just who you are.
I think it was certainly nature. I mean, I came from a family of doctors primarily, and a family of immigrants where they really thought that the only path to success was to be a doctor, lawyer, engineer, go to college, and get a degree, take a test, and then like go on this like set track. And in fact, I was like the black sheep of my family because I was not going on that track. And I'm literally the only one out of my four siblings who did not become a doctor. And I had cousins who lived down the street, three of them who were basically like my siblings. They all became doctors. So literally the only one in my immediate family out of the quote unquote kids that didn't become a doctor.
You're not alone in that, right? There's a lot of immigrants who have a similar sort of story. We brought Jaspreet Singh on the podcast a long time ago, Matt from Minority Mindset. He said the same thing. Like, he's been an incredible success, and yet, you know, his parents were like, "You're not a doctor or a lawyer, so it doesn't matter." So, how has your family responded, Hala, to you? You said you're the black sheep, but seeing all the success you've had and the ways you've been able to kind of, like, I don't know, create a pretty, like, almost like a media empire. How does your family think about you now that you're not a doctor or a lawyer, but you're still successful?
Now they're asking me, "Can we sleep on your couch?" You know, like, so no, I'm like by far the most successful one in my family now. So. It all worked out, but it was really hard in those years when nobody believed in me. You know, there was probably like 5-6 years where everybody, even though I was doing such cool things on the internet, nobody understood it. And I was really looked down, and like I would go to the Thanksgiving and I feel like people were really condescending to me and didn't understand what I did. And it was really only until like I really just had something to show for myself that they started being proud of me and like accepting what I was doing.
Why'd you keep doing it? And was there any point you wanted to quit when you were kind of confronted with other people's disbelief along the way?
Especially your family. Yeah.
I did quit. I actually started my career on this journey in broadcasting when I was 19 years old. I quit college to take an internship at Hot 97 and become Angie Martinez's assistant for 3 years. And I didn't get paid a cent. I made money like hosting hip hop showcases at night, and I'd have all these like outside online radio shows on the side to like hone my broadcasting chops. And then I started a blog for 3 years that became super popular, and I almost got a show on MTV, and that didn't work out. And so I had a bunch of failures in a row, not getting a job at radio that I worked really hard for and worked for free for 3 years, and then ended up getting fired from my internship. Then I, you know, almost got a show on MTV with this blog that I basically, again, worked for free for 3 years, just building this brand, hosting parties and doing all these like odd jobs to make it work. And then MTV dropped me, and then I did quit. I literally was like, okay, I got to be a normal person. I got to go maybe get my MBA, do something different, and just get a regular job. And for 4 years before I started Young and Profiting Podcast, I literally just had a normal corporate job, and I thought I'd never get back on the mic.
You seem to have like a drive. Like, you're tenacious. And like, honestly, I'm curious to hear your take specifically on immigrants, and specifically, I guess, second generation immigrants in America. It seems like that they embrace and live out the American dream, I think, more than almost any other segment in society. Do you think that's the case? And
yeah, like, I find purpose in work, and I do find a lot of people who are like American, they don't. They have more of a sense of entitlement about their work. And for me, you know, my I'm Palestinian American, so really crazy time to be 100% Palestinian. So it's been a crazy time. And but I my dad basically grew up in poverty, grew up in a war, ended up becoming a doctor, ended up becoming a surgeon in America, opened up a medical center, and he had like enormous drive and literally came from nothing, had no electricity, had like no running water, like literally came from nothing. So for me, it's just like, you know, I wasn't really spoiled growing up because my parents came from nothing. So they didn't understand like luxury and like that. And they donated a lot of their money. So like, I wasn't spoiled at all, even though my family did really well. But I saw like that anything was possible, that you could literally create a lot from nothing. And for me, it's just like, well, I basically had a silver spoon in my mouth, and what's my excuse? So how am I going to make a big impact? And really what drives me is that there's really not a lot of other girls that look like me that are in my position. So now what drives me now is the fact that all these brown girls keep messaging me like, oh, like because of you, I feel like I can be an entrepreneur. Because of you, you've inspired me. And I need to fill gap, because there's maybe there's like 5 other women that I can think of that are in my position right now as a brown person, woman in America.
You mentioned your dad. It certainly sounds like he's had an impact on you too. And is that maybe where you think your work ethic came from and your dedication is, seeing him come from nothing. We talk about like self-made in America, like there's the myth of the self-made man or something like that. And it's a lot easier to become quote unquote self-made starting out on kind of the third base of being in a really rich culture like we live in versus actually kind of self-made man, like it sounds like your dad was rising out of nothing. Yeah. What sort of influence did he have on you?
Oh, he was the best. So my dad actually passed away during COVID, and that was so tough on me because he was just like the best human in the world. And I think what my dad taught me was generosity, because he got so successful and he never stopped shopping at Sears. He like was just really humble, and he really made it his life's purpose to help everybody around him. So he cared more about like his employees getting paid. I remember like if I had like a friend that wasn't doing well, he used to give my friends money when we'd go to the mall and not even tell me. And they told me years later, like, hey, your dad used to give me money when we went to the mall.
That's so
like,
cool.
You know, and like he was just like so such a nice, generous guy. He put all my nieces and nephews through college in Palestine and like pulled my whole family out of poverty. So he taught me generosity. And even now, like, I'm just like such a generous person. Like anybody who knows me personally, like I'm always trying to help my employees. Like, my goal of building my company as big as possible is actually not, I don't really care about money. Like, in fact, I invest almost everything I make back into my company because I just want to make an impact. I just want to help people. I want to inspire people to live their most fulfilled, purposeful lives. And we need powerful people who have money to help improve our world. And like, that's my drive, is like, I just want to make the world a better place.
Okay. So you quickly ran through your early career, and you kind of went through like the blog and then possibly the reality show taking off, but your podcast, it seemed like that basically started out as a side hustle. I think at the time you were working in marketing at Disney.
Yep.
I guess what was the spark that made you want to actually start your own thing? Was it that desire to have an impact on the world, or were you fed up with more the corporate 9-to-5 type of job?
Honestly, like everything that I've ever done that amounted to anything was always like revenge, you know? So it's like, I was like working at Hewlett Packard and I was doing great. And I actually thought that I was going to be so far behind in corporate, because when I started my corporate career, I was already like 28 years old. And I literally had never had a real job. My resume looked crazy. Like, I was interning at a radio station and I was blogging for a hip hop website called the Sorority of Hip Hop. Like, I had the craziest resume, but I was actually so talented. I was so tech savvy. I could hack any social platform. I could video edit. I had all these skills that I had acquired.
You have to be a jack of all trades to really, like, you know, get all those things off the ground.
Exactly. So it's like, I knew how to do so many things. So actually, when I got into corporate, I was like skipping over people twice my age. And my last job at Hewlett Packard, which was my first job, I was like the C-suite's pet, like doing all the QBRs and like really rose up the ranks. And at the same time, I was the same person. I was the same Hala, interviewing the CEO and CMO at the town hall and going, getting flown to all the events and on the mic. I was still like on the mic all the time, but just in my marketing corporate role. And I actually became like the face of the young employees at Hewlett Packard. And I was president of this thing called the Young Employee Network. And I did that for 2 years. And it was basically like a side hustle within my main job that I worked super hard on. And then I wanted to be the global young employee president. And I was on the global board and I had all the credentials. And then this lady who didn't like me gave it to somebody who literally had never been a part of the organization, and they didn't even keep me on the board.
No, geez.
And I was just like mortified, because I was like, I just literally spent 3 years volunteering to become the president, and everybody thought I was going to be the president. And then I realized, I was like, man, I did it again. Like, I did it at Hot 97, work for free, not my own brand. I did it at, you know, Strawberry Blonde, it was mine, but like, whatever. And then this thing, I was working for free and it didn't work out. And it was a gatekeeper that told me no. And I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. If I'm going to build something from now on, it's going to be for myself. And so I decided I was going to start this podcast. If I couldn't lead the, you know, 7,000 young employees at Hewlett Packard, then I'd go lead all the professionals, young professionals on LinkedIn.
Hey, there's millions there, you know?
Yeah. And so I was like, all right, I'll just do the same thing I'm doing here, helping all these young people. Now I'll just do it for the public and make my own thing. So Young and Profiting was probably inspired by the Young Employee Network, looking back. And I started this podcast and I started posting on LinkedIn. And then I became really quickly an influencer on LinkedIn. LinkedIn, and then shortly after, my podcast started getting some traction.
We have a lot of questions about LinkedIn that we're going to get to in a little bit, but how long before you ended up making money? And it's like talking, hearing your story, a lot of years, you're working your butt off, you're not really making much, if anything. How long would you tell someone to keep at it before they decide to throw in the towel? When do you know that your idea is a failure, or how do you know if it just needs more time?
This is such a great question, because I feel like I'm so happy I quit so many things when I decided to quit. Like, I had to quit my job at one point to take my podcast to the next level. I had to actually shut down my blog in order to take on my corporate career. So I've had lots of points in my life where I had to quit, and it made a lot of people upset. But you've got to look at yourself, right? And what's the best thing for yourself and your future? So for example, with this blog, we were doing it for 3 years. We hadn't really figured out how to monetize the blog that well. We were hosting parties, but it was like 3 years of like scraping by. And I was like, I just can't see us getting out of this. Like, the only thing we had was this TV show that could have given us some notoriety. Then we didn't get that. And I was like, you know what? Screw it. I could keep at this for another 3 years, or I can... You know, for me, I had to find a way to sustain myself, and that was corporate. That was an easy, like, okay, I'm going to get a 9-to-5 job. It's not exactly what I want, but this is what I need. I need to be able to afford my rent, afford my car, and build some wealth, because I did experiment for a while, and it was great and fun, but it wasn't sustainable. And so I actually had to do something I did not want to do in order to build a foundation. And then when I worked into corporate, I quickly got to six figures, like so quickly. And then I had a foundation finally. And that's when I started my side hustle. And actually, I was very scarred for having a failed entrepreneurship experience early on, that it took me a really long time to actually quit my job and become an entrepreneur, even though I was making like so much money and having so much success. I was scared to quit my job.
Hmm. Yeah, those were overlapping for a decent chunk of time, right?
It was, yeah.
Okay, so what was it then that allowed you to quit? Like, was it a certain dollar amount? Was it a psychological state that you arrived in? Like, when did you decide to take the leap and transition to, yeah, full time? Because it even sounds like you had... like a massive business with like, I think I read it right. You had over 30 employees by the time,
yep.
Really? By the time you quit?
Oh my gosh.
I really waited a long time. My second client was paying us $30,000 a month. That was my second client. Yeah, and then I got like two other clients that size. So by the time I quit Disney, I had 30 employees around the world, and we were making well over $100,000 a month in the side hustle.
That's a nice idea.
I wasn't even monetizing my podcast yet. I was just, all the podcast guests that would come on my show, they kept asking me for services. And then I just, I had a volunteer team. So I offered them, I turned my volunteer team. This is actually pretty interesting. So I'll step back. When I started my podcast 6 years ago, I started on LinkedIn. And I used to have super fans that would reach out to me, and they'd be like, Holly, you changed my life. Like, I've never heard, like, I never like even listened to podcasts before. And now I've done X, Y, and Z. Like, how can I help you? How can I make this bigger? I want to learn from you. And again, I was this jack of all trades. I could write. I could hack social media. I could create websites, graphic design, video editing. I knew how to do all the steps. And so I would just like start teaching people how to, I just started recruiting these volunteers and interns, actually fans who would reach out to me, and I put them in a Slack channel. And for 2 years, this is how I was able to have a really big podcast for 2 years while working a very serious corporate job, is because I had 20 volunteers who worked for free for me for two years.
Super fans.
And super fans. And they just wanted to learn from me. And then, once COVID hit and I found myself with a little bit more time, I started to just pay attention to what everybody was asking me, because I started to not feel happy at Disney. I felt like HP saw me growing up, and like I was like a rock star at HP and really respected. When I went to Disney, I look about 10 years younger than I really am. And I was treated like an intern, and I just felt like I didn't have any respect. I felt like I was starting from scratch again. And I was like, you know what? I need to just go out on my own, because I know my own worth and Disney does not value me. And so I started paying attention to what my audience was asking me. And it was the guests who came on my show at the end of almost every time. They'd be like, how did you grow your LinkedIn? How'd you grow your podcast? Can you do this for me? And then finally, one day, Heather Monahan, who was my first client and still my client, she's a huge LinkedIn influencer. She wouldn't leave me alone. She was like, your videos are so awesome. Like, you have to do my videos. And then I told her, like, hey, like, I don't have time. You know, I've got this like really stressful job, but I can train you on the week. I told her I'll train her on the weekends. And so we started having these like Saturday sessions where I was trying to teach her how to video edit. And she's like, Hala, like, I'm not going to learn how to do this. She's like, I just had a call with Gary Vee's team, VaynerMedia. I can pay them or I can pay you. Like, you've got a company. You just showed me your Slack. You have a team. Like, I don't understand. Like, I'll be your first client. You don't even like your job at Disney. She was like starting to become my mentor. She was like, just do it. And I was like, okay. So she was my first client and she paid us like nothing. And then, like I said, my second client was a billionaire and I landed like a $30,000 monthly retainer with him for like LinkedIn and podcast production. And then I was able to start hiring my volunteers and paying them and start hiring more people. And then before I knew it, 6 months later, 30 employees around the world. Like super high level clients making over 100K a month, found out I was going to be on the cover of Podcast Magazine. And that's what triggered. I was like, well, I mean, I probably made it if I'm getting on the cover of Podcast Magazine. I should probably quit my job now.
I love it. Your story, so inspiring. And I think there's a lot we can learn just from you telling it. But then there's a lot of specifics we need to get into as well. The jack of all trades I referred to. You know a lot about a lot of things. We want to talk about tips for other people starting their own business. We'll get to that and more right after this. Kachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Kachava really earns their 52,000-plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Kachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Kachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Kachava. Just go to kachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A and get 10% off your first order. That's kachava.com/howtomoney.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. That's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, we are back talking with Hala Taha. And Hala, we want to kind of talk about starting your own business. We want to talk about entrepreneurship. Before we transition to that, I'm curious, you quickly glossed over the fact that you went back to get your MBA. So if I heard you right, you dropped out of school to take that initial radio internship. But then somehow you ended up with your MBA. How did all that come together?
I have to say, my college career is a hot mess. So I got to college. And I went to a very nerdy tech school and I was like Miss Popular, but, you know, it was a new feeling for me because in high school, like when when I was in high school, 9/11 happened, and I'm Arabic, and it was like really weird. Like the teachers were weird to me. Like I never really got opportunities. Like I tried out for the cheerleading team. I didn't make it. I tried out for the volleyball team. I didn't make it. I used to be the lead in all my school plays in middle school, and in high school they wouldn't even let me in the talent show. And I literally had the best voice in school, but my hands down. It was really like they were really racist. Like I was one of the only brown people in school. It was like totally like a really white town. And so when I got to college, I went to a really diverse college, and then suddenly it was like an equal playing field. And I just was like overwhelmed with wanting to do every activity. So I was like in the radio club. I was captain of the cheerleading team. I was in my like on the board of my sorority. I did everything but go to class. Literally did not go to class. I never went to class. And I did really well working, but I wasn't good at being a student. I was like obsessed with this job at Hot 97 and this internship, and I became like super obsessed with it. They asked me to start coming in every day. The way that it works in radio is you basically just pay your dues for many years, at least at Hot 97. And it's essentially an illegal internship, right? So they just kept, Angie was like, can you come here every day? And I was like, sure. And then I just dropped out of school. And I was I was doing really bad in school anyway. So I felt like, okay, I'm failing out of school anyway. I think I had like a 2 point, I had the worst GPA, like a 2 point something GPA. Like I was a hot mess, but I was doing amazing at Hot 97. And actually, I've sang my whole life, like I was saying. So I thought that I was going to be at Hot 97, and I was pushing my music. I was singing and songwriting, and I was pushing my music on the DJs. And I thought that I was taking that internship to become a singer and make it. But then I fell in love with broadcasting, and I wanted to be like the next Angie Martinez. And they had me doing commercials. And then that's how I became like this love of being what I do today, right?
You and Joel both with the love of broadcast.
Radio background. I used to fall asleep listening to talk radio, which is the weirdest thing. Like everyone thinks that I'm psychotic because of that. But I would fall asleep listening to boring AM talk radio. I just loved it. And I loved that kind of medium of communication, long form audio. It just has a power to it that television doesn't even have. So yeah, I get it. And there is a bond, a connection you can have with your audience. I think when they hear you in their ear holes for like 3 hours a week, or you know, a lot of our listeners probably this is like one episode out of three or whatever. But however much you listen to, you get to know us because you can't help but get to know that person, which I think is beautiful about
totally
audio.
And then just like back to your original question, and I'll be really fast. I know this was like a long-winded answer, but I ended up getting fired from Hot 97. So imagine getting fired from a free internship.
Yeah.
And I was like the queen of the interns.
Please leave.
They obviously valued me. But what happened was is that a paid job opened up, and I basically texted my friend who got the job, and I was supposed to train him. Even though I was working for free, they wanted me to go into work and train the person who they're going to pay to do the job that I was already doing for free.
It's pretty cold.
And,
yeah, that's cold.
Yeah. And so then I was like, sorry, guys. I was like, his name was Drewski. Sorry, Drewski. If you want to learn how to be the producer, learn it on your own. I'm not going to work. Angie cut off my key cards. She also didn't like, it was really cruel. She didn't let me say bye to anyone. She told everybody they can't talk to me anymore. These were all my best friends, my mentors. I literally dropped out of school for them. And so it was devastating. And I just remember feeling like a part of me died because I had branded myself as Hala from Hot 97. This is what everybody knew me as. All my social handles were Hala from Hot 97. And it literally felt like somebody died. But then I quickly thought of this other idea to start this blog. And at that point, I went back to school. And I was a totally different person. I was a completely different person. All of a sudden, I was getting straight A's. I graduated my senior year straight A's. Now, to get into my MBA, my GPA was still so terrible. I actually had to convince our director of graduate studies to allow me in the program. I lobbied myself. And I would write her emails, and then finally she agreed to have coffee with me. And then I told her my story, and she was impressed. And she was like, okay, I'll let you in the program. She's like, especially if you can maintain a 4.0. And I was like, all right, I'll do it. I promise I'll get a 4.0. I got a 4.0 and I graduated number one in my class. And that's how I got into corporate. So
nice.
Okay, this shows so much persistence and hustle and grind. And I guess I'm curious because there's been a lot of kind of poo-pooing on hustle culture. You know, and there to a certain extent, I totally see where that comes from, that it's possible to overdo it, right? And a lot of people are tired of hearing the hustle culture pitch. But you were, you know, grinding in all these side hustles. You were working without pay. And then you were also, like, look what you did to get your MBA. I mean, it's so impressive. What's your take on hustle culture? Is it overdone? Is it underdone? Like, have we kind of missed the sweet spot?
I think there has to be a point in your life where you are hustling. And for me, and even in your 20s, and Gary Vee says this all the time, like, you can hustle and make no money. But for example, like, my company's on track to make $10 million next year. And that would not be possible had I not worked for free in my 20s and learned all the skills that I did, had I not worked in the mall and learned all the skills that I did. Like, so for me, it's like there's a like you need to hustle because you need to get the skills. And that's the thing that I feel like is missing from all these young people. They're not taking the time to get the skills. They want all the shortcuts. But you build the character and the skills and the expertise through all the grunt work that you do. And so for me, it was like, I'm so thankful for all those experiences, even though they didn't pan out to anything, because that's how I'm making millions today. It's from all the hard work that I did years ago and didn't get paid for.
That makes sense. It's funny because I feel like the hustle culture, grinding it out, that was, I feel like it really got big 5, 6, 7 years ago, and everyone was picking up side gigs, they're side hustling. And I feel like it's almost fallen out of favor to a certain extent, because folks are like, who wants to do that? You know, folks are quiet quitting now. But I hadn't thought about it from the standpoint that you are, which almost is more from like a social, cultural side of things. Like, and even us, me as an adult, like, our patience is not what it used to be. The immediate gratification that we can receive by how responsive an app is on our phone, the ability to post something and immediately see a like, that isn't good for our psyches, right? Mm-hmm. It erodes our ability to persevere, I think. And I think that's one of the downsides of technology specifically. But I had not thought about side hustling as just a means of formation and the ability for youth especially to, I guess, to be able to learn from that.
It's almost like you're a Swiss Army knife of a human being, too, because it's all these like disparate skills that you pick up along the way, and you're like, well, this one in and of itself isn't terribly valuable, but when it's combined with these other four things, it makes me like superhuman. Now I can run a podcast network. I mean, and I think that's what we fail to maybe see in the moment sometimes, is that each one of those skills, as we're acquiring them, is going to lead to something bigger and brighter, even if it's not like the one thing we're going to coast on for the rest of our lives.
I will say, so the difference that as well between the side gig apps and what it is that Hala is doing is that she's like, Hala, you were pursuing things that were incredibly meaningful to you, that would hopefully lead to something bigger. You weren't just trading your time for money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many things that I want to say. One thing related to what you guys said is like, this is something that Jason Pfeiffer taught me. And looking back at my story, I always did this. You have an opportunity set A and an opportunity set B in everything that you do. So, for example, when I worked at Hewlett-Packard, my opportunity set A was the job they paid me for. Opportunity set B was all the other stuff that I was doing. I was president of the Young Employee Network, planning the holiday party, planning the summer picnic, going to all these other events. When I worked at Hot 97, my opportunity set A was being Angie Martinez's intern. But on the side, I had online radio shows. I was blogging for DJ Enough. I was hosting showcases at night. So it's like I always looked at like not only the opportunity that they're paying me for, but what are the opportunities to learn and grow, you know?
Yeah, you probably don't get the opportunity to do some of those radio shows without being the intern, right? Like, that is the foot in the door to get the extra opportunity. And so, yeah, I did an unpaid internship in radio as well. And some people would say that's unconscionable to make somebody work for free. But are you kidding me? Like, it gave me the opportunity I in so many ways. It gave me the connections and the work experience, and it was crucial to who I am now. Let's talk about marketing.
Okay.
Your podcast is great, and the product is, of course, crucial to success, but given the amount of noise in the podcasting space, like, even a great podcast could wallow in obscurity, I think, in a lot of times these days, just given how many there are. Talk to us about the marketing piece of the puzzle, and maybe then how we can extrapolate that to everyone else out there listening who doesn't have a podcast but has something marketable, whether it's themselves or a business they own.
Yeah, so really, it's all about like creative problem solving, right? When I first started in podcasts, for 2 years, it was like very slow, steady growth because I just kept doing the same thing that everybody else was doing, like trying to rank on Apple. All I cared about was Apple because it had like 70% of the market share. Maybe it was 60% of the market share, and that's all I paid attention to. And then I started thinking about like, what are the other ways that I can be a successful podcaster? Like, does being a successful podcaster mean that I have to be the top of the charts on Apple? Or could it mean something else? And then I started realizing, well, there's 70 other apps out there. There's Spotify, there's Google Play, there's CastBox, there's Player FM, there's all these other apps. What if I reached out to them and see if they want to collaborate? Because I had grown a platform on LinkedIn. I had grown an audience on LinkedIn, and I thought I can leverage LinkedIn in order to grow my podcast. And that's how you have to think. If you have any sort of business, you can trade audiences with people. And the key to do that is to have one thing that you can leverage. And this is the mistake that people make. They go omni-channel right away. And they're like, okay, I'm going to be on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, email list, da-da-da-da. When I first started, all I cared about was LinkedIn. I didn't even post on Instagram. I was like, I'm going to be the number one podcaster on LinkedIn. And I figured out how the algorithm worked. I figured out how the features worked. I figured out how to build a community proactively. And then all of a sudden, I figured that out before podcasting even. And so suddenly I had 60,000 followers. Now I have way more. But back then I had 60,000. That was something that I could now trade.
Why'd you choose LinkedIn? Like, for anybody who's out there listening and they're saying, I thought LinkedIn was like my dad's suit photo.
Old white guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Why LinkedIn? It just seems so, the hot places are TikTok and Instagram, Tala. Don't you know that? Like, why LinkedIn?
LinkedIn is so great. There's 135 million active users on LinkedIn, and only 6% of them are original content creators. So there's very little competition. There's lots of eyeballs on LinkedIn. It's also an amazing place to be an entrepreneur because people are primed for sales conversations. It's a professional platform. People are actually using LinkedIn in their research for their buying journeys. Because it's branded as this professional network where people are going to learn and solve their problems, having a sales conversation is really welcomed on that platform. Mm. Where if you try to have a sales conversation on Instagram, it's a little weird because it's so personal, right? LinkedIn is a professional platform that does have a feed and has a social algorithm just like any other platform. So LinkedIn's absolutely amazing and it changed my life. Like, I'm so thankful that I started my journey on LinkedIn. And then the other reason was just pure luck. I was shadow banned on Instagram because I'm Palestinian. They've been shadow banning Palestinians for years.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Fascinating to hear so much adversity that you faced, I mean, starting in basically high school for you. But I really do want to hear more about LinkedIn, though. And specifically, it makes so much sense because it's fertile ground for business transactions to take place. And so we're going to take a quick break. But after that, we've got a bunch more questions about LinkedIn, and we'll get to all that right after this.
Kachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Kachava really earns their 52,000-plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Kachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Kachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Kachava. Just go to kachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com/howtomoney.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. That's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. All right, we're back. We're still talking with Hala Taha. We're talking about building a podcast, building a brand, marketing, getting the word out there. And it is one thing to create a great product, and that is difficult in and of itself to create something consistently good that people want to listen to or that people want to engage with. Holly, you're talking about using LinkedIn to actually reach your audience. And for a lot of people, that's the toughest thing. And it feels like, especially social media, man, if you strike gold, you can hit the algorithm right and it'll be rewarded and they might help you find your audience. But you're saying that LinkedIn was the place for that. Talk to me maybe through some of the nitty gritty. What are you posting? How are you engaging? What does it look like for you to actually grow your podcast on LinkedIn?
In terms of like right now, I mean, my strategies were really different, right? So initially when I was trying to grow my podcast, what I did is I traded my audience. So what I did is I reached out to all the different podcast players out there, every single tool I used, my hosting provider, my like recording platform, Riverside, that we're on right now. I literally reached out to every single podcast brand, player or not. And I was like, hey, I'm the biggest podcaster on LinkedIn. I'd love to write a post about you in exchange for you posting me on your website, featuring me in your app, putting out an email blast for me. That's when my podcast blew up, because suddenly I was getting all this exposure outside of LinkedIn and I was trading my audience. So that's the first way that I grew my podcast. Now, you know, the best way to grow anything, forget about a podcast. Let's just talk about any business, anything that anybody has, is to retarget your content, okay? So what does that mean? You put up a post and it's about your podcast, or you put up a live stream of your fully edited podcast, which is my favorite thing to do on LinkedIn. Anybody who likes, comments, or shares is basically raising their hand and saying, like, you've got permission to DM me. I took the first action. I took the first behavior here, and you have permission to DM me. And no matter what you say, you're not going to be spammy or salesy because I took the first action. So you would say something like, hey, I noticed that you just engaged on my live stream. If you want to check out the full episode, here's the link. Would love to hear back from you. You know, then they write back something positive. Oh, thank you so much. Can you copy and paste that as an Apple Podcast review? Really appreciate it. So creating all these drip campaigns, they're called, where you retarget your posts. So you could do this with anything. If you could put up a poll on LinkedIn and say, like, let's say you're a real estate agent. You could say, are you in the market for a new house? Yes or no? Anybody who says yes, you can say, hey, I noticed that you engaged on my poll that you're looking for a new house. I'd love to help you. Here's a free resource. And you can drive them down your funnel. So retargeting your own posts is a really great way to drive sales and momentum. And yeah, like, I know everything about LinkedIn, so happy to talk about algorithms, engagement hacks, wherever you want to go.
I'm curious to know, do you think everybody, regardless of what they do, should everybody have a LinkedIn profile? Because I'll be honest.
And presence, right?
Hala, like, I don't, I'm not up there at all.
You've never even created one?
I think I've created a profile, but I cannot remember the last time I've logged in there. So
I've created one, but I don't think I've ever posted.
Go ahead and rig me over the coals.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not going to bother posting or taking care of it, don't bother at all. You know, like, you're not going to get any traction if you're not going to invest the time.
Sure.
So I would say, like, until you're ready to start posting at least 3 times a week, I wouldn't even bother, because you're just not going
to
get anywhere.
Okay, so you need to post regularly. What else do you need to do to drive engagement if you're looking to kind of, yeah, grow your presence, grow your reach there?
Okay, so a couple things. Let's talk about utilizing the features. So every social media platform has different features that they're prioritizing, okay? So on LinkedIn, it's actually not a video-first platform. It's not trying to compete with Instagram and TikTok. And so video content actually performs pretty poorly on that platform. So the assets that do perform well are typically pictures with, like, some sort of story that goes along with it, a quote card that's like a really easy to read, skimmable quote. Okay. Live streams work well on LinkedIn. Polls. Okay. So it's understanding the features that work for every single platform. That's super key. The other thing to think about is people are on their phone. Okay. So when it comes to your assets, video or graphic, you want to make them vertical and take up as much real estate as possible, so that when people are scrolling in their feed, they're scrolling through about 9 posts, that you're actually taking up a lot of real estate on the feed.
Yeah, you want to crowd everybody else out.
Exactly. So it's going to draw more attention. People have more to look at. You actually get ranked based on how much time people spend on your post. So it's like they have more to look at. So it's really important to do that. The other thing is, you know, being skimmable, okay? If you look on LinkedIn, you'll see a lot of the influencers are doing this, like, line by line copywriting. It's called broetry. And that's actually on purpose. LinkedIn's algorithm is actually scanning for formatting. And if you have big, chunky paragraphs that are really hard to read, nobody wants to do work on social media. That's like being the boring person who's lecturing at a party, right? So being skimmable, right, is really important. And the last tip that I'll give is that keywords are becoming increasingly important. So LinkedIn's moving away from just basing things on engagement. So in the past, anything motivational, inspirational would go like skyrocket on LinkedIn. Like, you could be like, you know, sky's the limit and get a million likes, you know, like, it was just like anything motivational did amazing, right? And now it's all about experts and interest relevancy. So they're basically doing a lot of keyword matching. So you've got to have...
it's more SEO-like.
It's more SEO. It's like,
yeah,
LinkedIn
almost sounds like it's turning into Google.
Exactly. So it's like you need to infuse your profile with keywords that might be found in your target audience's profile. And then you need to infuse those keywords in your actual posts. And then LinkedIn is doing a better job of matching people who want similar content with your content, especially if you're... somebody that they've identified as an expert in the topic that you're talking about. So you might have that, like, LinkedIn top voice badge, or even if, like, your past job history has the same keywords, or you've been, like, recommended for skills in that area, they'll identify you as an expert and start serving your content to people who want it. So keywords are becoming increasingly important.
Very cool. Specifically, you're talking to content creators, folks who might be trying to gather together an audience, do these same tactics and utilizing some of these same features. Does that also work for someone who's basically looking for just a great paying job with a, like, more of a corporate gig? Does that also translate?
Yeah. So a lot of the people that I work with, I have a LinkedIn masterclass, and most of them are entrepreneurs, coaches. They've got some sort of small business. But then I do have a lot of corporate professionals. And what happens is that it gives you more stability in the corporate world. I even started my journey on LinkedIn in the corporate world. And I remember immediately that, like, I started getting more opportunities, more exposure. I was getting noticed by higher ups. And even somebody today, I have a mastermind, her name's Anita. She was telling me that she, in her job, that, like, everyone now is taking notice and asking her about LinkedIn, and she's getting more visibility from higher ups because of everything that she's doing on LinkedIn. So a lot of people get scared of using their LinkedIn for their own personal benefit, but that is a transferable asset. You've got to think that if you're in corporate, you might want to switch jobs one day. You might want to start your own thing. This is your way to start building that foundation while you have the stability of a full-time job. So I always encourage people to start building their personal brand. You need that more than ever now. Even when people are looking to give you a job, they want to see you having some sort of personal brand and presence. So I think it's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, taking some time to be regular, to kind of become a thought leader in your industry, it's mm-hmm. only going to be good for you. It's only going to bring you connections and mm-hmm. and potentially job offers as well. Question for you. When you're posting on somebody else's site, especially one of these tech companies, and the algorithm determines what everyone's going to see, you're alluding to it, that can change, right? And so it favors one thing over another at different times, and it can diminish your voice too, and it can really, after you've spent years building something, it can kind of pull the rug out from under you. I was talking to someone the other day, and they built up a pretty substantial Twitter following, and then boom, Twitter changes the algorithm, and it feels like their post is yelling into the void. So how do you think about, and I think that's why people have prioritized newsletters, because it's this mm-hmm. direct connection to your audience.
Full control.
Yeah, nobody can really take away. So how do you think about building and spending so much time creating on a platform that you don't have as much control of?
It's a really good point, and it's something that, you know, I've been thinking about a lot, because even I'm LinkedIn's like one of their top creators, and they've even done like some shadow banning with me recently because of like the whole war that's going on, or it's tough. And I am a really big advocate of email lists. So I've been like driving all of my following to webinars where I'm collecting everybody's email and like rapidly growing my email list, because it's true. These platforms can change. They can also decide to specifically target you based on your beliefs, which is really crazy. Like one day we're going to look back and we're going to we won't be able to believe that all of this was legal, to be honest. Mm. It is really, really messed up what they're doing to people based on beliefs, which is like totally unfair, I think.
It's amazing how a few people working in a tech company can have such a domino effect on all the rest of us. And we just think, oh, this is the way the technology operates. But no, there's human control and human input into how it operates.
Exactly. But long story short, and this is actually going to be the topic of my first book, is that algorithms always change, but human behavior doesn't. Mm. So algorithms change all the time, but a lot of the stuff that I teach in marketing and in my classes and stuff is human behavior, because human behavior never changes. And LinkedIn literally has a goal to make sure that like when something goes viral, they're actually studying it to find out how that happened so it doesn't happen again. They don't want like, you know, just 1% of the creators having all the impressions. They want it to be more flat, where it's just like experts delivering content to people who want it, right? So they're actually not wanting people to go viral, but they can't control at the end of the day what makes people click the share button.
Yeah.
They can try all they want, but human behavior doesn't change, right? So it's just like understanding what are the things that I need to do that are evergreen.
Yeah.
That no matter what platform I go on, it's going to work, because human psychology doesn't change.
I love that.
The things that serve and help people.
Sounds
too,
yeah. like a promising book is what that sounds like.
Yeah.
Okay. So on your podcast, you always ask folks, what is the secret to profiting in life?
Oh.
So we're going to actually turn the tables
oh, boy.
back on you a little bit. We're curious to hear your response. What is it that allows folks to profit the most in life?
What is the secret to profiting in life? I think I'm going to tie it back to what we were talking about earlier, and that's skills. I think the reason why I've been really successful is because I fully absorb myself in whatever I'm doing. When I started a podcast, I didn't just learn how to be a good interviewer. I didn't just learn how to put on the recording software and figure out the equipment. And I looked at everything. How can I grow? How can I monetize? How can I, you know, create a business out of this? How I looked at every single nook and cranny and figured it all out. And that's how I became successful. I wasn't the best podcast host. I'm still not the best podcast host, but I'm literally like number 87 podcast in the world. Why? Because I figured out what I am good at within the whole realm of podcasting. And I just milked every little inch that I could and figured it all out. you know? So it's like, I meet a lot of podcasters now, for example, that like don't know how to monetize or don't. And to me, it's like mind boggling how they didn't learn their entire industry, even if they're not the best at every single part, but like fully understanding the landscape of what they're trying to play in, right? Yeah. And I think a lot of that has to do with like absorbing yourself, not being afraid to learn, like you know, being willing to roll up your sleeves and do the nitty gritty. Like eventually you can outsource things, but you should know how to do everything yourself first, mm-hmm. you know? So it's like learning the skills, really absorbing yourself, not being afraid to learn, and just, again, like learning things A to Z and not trying to find shortcuts to your success.
That's great advice. Hala, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today. Where can our listeners find out more about you and what you're up to?
Thanks, guys. I really had a great time. Young and Profiting is the name of my show. I interview the brightest minds in the world, and it is a fantastic show. You can listen, learn, and profit over there. You can also find out more about my company at Yap Media. That's yapmedia.io. And there you can find out about my social agency, my podcast network, which is the number one business and self-improvement podcast network. I've got podcasters like Jenna Kutcher, John Lee Dumas, Amy Porterfield in my network. So it's really growing fast. And then if you guys want to learn about LinkedIn, I have a 2-day workshop. You guys can actually use code HTM for 35% off at yapmedia.io/course.
That's right. And we'll make sure to link to all of that in our show notes. Hala, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you guys so much.
All right, Matt, that was a good one. There's
a lot of good takeaways.
I always like talking to people who do stuff that's outside of my area of expertise. And
like LinkedIn? Are you not on LinkedIn?
I'm on there. Have I? I don't know if I've, like I said, ever posted a single thing. So
I think I did.
I exist in the ether there. But
I think I did at one point, and it was literally, it's funny enough, it was, I think it was for SEO purposes, and this is like 15 years ago, but just as far as getting certain domains registered, not domains registered, but accounts registered, mm-hmm. just to be able to point to certain resources. But like she mentioned, it doesn't really matter unless you are active. It takes... you rolling up your sleeves and doing the work, which
and
alludes,
she's the kind of person
alludes to my takeaway, so
who
I'll
does
stop
just
there.
That? Yeah, no, go ahead.
I think my big takeaway has to do with the fact that she was honing in on skills there at the end. Like for her, that was going to be the secret to profiting in life. And going back to internships and kind of doing the grunt work, a lot of times folks are looking for the shortcut. They're looking for the easiest way to arrive at the destination. And oftentimes that's a high paying position. But by taking the shortcuts, you've missed out on so many different opportunities to learn skills. And these are skills that are going to come in handy all throughout your life. I guess I commented on that during our conversation with her, but I really appreciate her view towards hustling and working hard just as a way that we learn and how we're formed as individuals. I thought that was really important.
Yeah, basically, I mean, what you're referring to is it's known as talent stacking. And I think it was the author Scott Adams that came up with that term. But that is, it's a powerful thing to be able to say, oh, all of these disparate things, well, they randomly come together and make me really successful at this thing. And so you might already have a bunch of different talents. Well, it's wise to sit back and think, how can I put those together in a way that's going to help me maybe do more with these talents that I'm currently doing? So lots of times you have the talents and you never know how they're going to come together. But it is, yeah, you're right, like putting in the hard work to develop those talents and then trying to fuse them into something maybe that's never been done before.
Yeah, it has a multiplying effect. But
or at least not in that way.
Yeah, which I totally agree with what you're saying. But I guess my point, though, is don't be afraid of the hard work, especially early on when like we have visions of what success looks like. And what's hard to keep in context is the fact that the folks who arrived at that point, it took them a long time to get to that. It makes me even think of like our parents. Think about the cars that they drive or the home that you grew up in. And you go out on your own and you think, well, I've got to at least have something like that. Except for you forget that it took them like 15 or 20 years to get to that point, and we want it instantly.
I think that's the appeal of cryptocurrency, right?
Yes, like, yes. It's the shortcuts, the get-rich-quick schemes, and there's not enough being said about putting in the time and doing the hard work.
Yep. All right, so piggybacking
on about
that,
you?
I like when she said that you absorb yourself in the thing. It was probably a lot of trial and error on LinkedIn mm-hmm. for her to get where she is. But it's kind of the thing that anybody can do. You just have to absorb yourself in it. You have to really go after that task and you know, and fail sometimes in order to see the ultimate successes. So, and Hala isn't afraid to admit that she failed a bunch of times along the way, or that she at least had some really tough times, had some sure. years that she put in a lot of work and then didn't feel
She calls it failure. Yeah. You know, she was fired from her internship. Like, right. That's rough.
Yeah. Yeah. Or failure in school and then going back and succeeding. So, I don't know. I love the stick-to-itiveness. I love that she was absorbing herself in everything that she did and willing to, it's not just the job, it's those secondary opportunities that came along, whether it's in a professional career, whether it's in an internship. It's if you do the bare minimum, guess what? You're not going to be rewarded in an incredible way. But if you're willing to go above and beyond and jump into those other things, it's not only potentially going to make you more visible within that work environment, but it's also going to be adding to those talents you're developing too.
Most definitely, yeah. The opportunity set A, but don't forget about opportunity set B as well. That's lurking like right around the corner right there for you. But all right, man, let's quickly introduce the beer that you and I enjoyed during this episode was, how do you say that? Chakarua?
Yeah.
Chakura?
Chakarua.
It's a barrel-aged imperial stout, and this is by Moat Mountain Brewing Company in collaboration with Tamworth Distilling, evidently.
Oh. Yeah, because it was aged in rye whiskey barrels.
Yeah, that must have been where they got their barrels. So this beer was donated to the show by Todd, who lives in our old neighborhood.
Lives literally right down on the same street like, that I lived on for a long
literally
time.
Literally in between, I think, in between you and me. Down there in Ormwood Park.
Yeah, Todd's an awesome dude. He brought back a few beers from his trip to, I want to say New Hampshire is where this was from.
Is that where that's from?
I think so.
What, did you dig it?
I did. I really enjoyed it. So,
super tasty.
What's better than, you know, a rye whiskey barrel aged stout? It was, and rye whiskey adds that those peppery notes too, right? And a little spice action. So
I feel like it offset the sweetness that you would typically, that sometimes is a little too much when it comes to an imperial stout like this. Like, obviously, you've got the toasty, roasty notes, but sometimes with a higher ABV, it can be a little sweet. But yeah, you get a touch of that rye.
That barrel.
It just adds so much more depth and flavor. It was fantastic.
Yeah. Thanks, Todd. Appreciate you, man. But that's going to do it for this one. Matt, until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out. Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.